I can find her, I say. And I can, no doubt. But saving and finding are two different things. The mother seems to sense that, and she shuts her eyes and turns away from me. With a clearing of his throat, the man in the cowboy hat pushes himself up from his chair. He's wearing old faded Levi's that probably fit 10 years ago, but now shrink back to leave his belly protruding over his belt buckle. A similarly ill-fitting cowboy shirt covers his aging paunch, and the look he gives me through bloodshot eyes tells me he's already in mourning. That maybe he doesn't believe much in saving either. He introduces the mother, the boy, and then himself. First and last name, and then clans, like you're supposed to. He's the missing girl's uncle. The boy is her brother. They are all Begays, a last name as common here as Smith is to the Biliganas. But his clans, the ancestral relations that make him Diné and decide our kinship obligations, are unfamiliar to me. He pauses, waiting for me to give my name and clans so he and the others can place me in their little world, decide our relations and what ke'e they might owe me, and what ke'e I owe them. But I don't oblige him. I've never been much for tradition, and it's better all around if we just stay strangers. Finally, the older Begay nods, understanding I'm not inclined toward proper Diné etiquette, and gestures to the cloth bag at his feet. This is all we have for trade, he says. His hands tremble as he speaks, which makes me think he's as bad a liar as I am. But he raises his chin defiantly, eyes wide under the brim of his hat. I step forward and crouch to look through the bag, doing the quick math in my head. The silver jewelry is nice. Beads, old stamp-worked bracelets, a few small squash blossoms. Even if the turquoise is sort of junk, missing the spidery veins that make the rocks worth big trade. I can exchange the silver for goods at the market in Cebonito, but the turquoise is useless, no more than pretty blue stones. The turquoise is shit, I tell him. A loud grunt and the other brother pushes his chair back. The metal feet screech across the tile in protest. He makes a show of crossing his arms in disgust. I ignore him and look back at the uncle. Maybe you should find someone else, law dogs or thirsty boys. He shakes his head, his moment of bravado leaking away under the weight of limited options. We tried. Nobody came. We wouldn't have sent a runner if we weren't desperate. He doesn't have to say it. I get it. The runner was a kid on a motorbike, short and squat, so runner was a bit of a misnomer. But he wore a pair of ancient Nikes, duct tape wrapped carefully thick around the toe and reinforcing the seam at the heel. So what do I know? He sat in my yard with the bike's motor idling loudly, making my dogs bark. I came to the door to tell him to go the hell away, that I wasn't in the monster hunting business anymore. But he told me Lugachikai needed help and nobody else would come, and there was a little girl, and besides, they were paying. I said it wasn't my problem, but the kid was persistent. And the truth was, I was interested. All I'd been doing the past 9 months was staring at the walls of my trailer. So what else did I have to do? Plus, I was getting low on funds and could use the trade. So when the kid refused to leave, I decided I'd go to Lugachukai. But now I'm starting to regret it. I'd forgotten in my months of self-imposed isolation how much I hate a crowd and how much a crowd hates me. The uncle spreads his hands, eyes begging where words fail. I thought, maybe once you saw. And I do see. But I figure the Begays are holding out. Maybe they don't want to pay because I'm a woman. Maybe because I'm not him. This is bullshit, the brother says loudly, and his challenge sends a nervous titter rippling through the gathering. What can she do that we can't do? He gestures to encompass his posse of friends along the wall. Clan powers? She won't even tell us what her clans are. And Nezhani's apprentice? We only have her word for it. At the mention of Nezhani's name, my heart speeds up and I can't breathe past the knot in my throat. But I force myself to swallow down the familiar hurt, the ache of abandonment, the pathetic flutter of desire. I haven't been Nezhani's anything for a long while now.